This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
Why isn't Pete Carroll more popular nationally? I feel like every year about this time, we get under the sway of Seattle's Willy Wonka. He's happy, he's upbeat. And then you go and talk to people around, and I don't know if I wouldn't say he is particularly liked within the NFL and with other fan bases. And maybe that's just generally true of all coaches. But even Bill Belichick, who's not liked, has a level of unilateral respect that people show him. I don't know if Pete gets that. And it always shocks me. Maybe that's because I spent the past couple days out of town. And so just talking to other NFL fans, it was the most devoted Jacksonville Jaguars fan I've ever met.
In New York City?
Yes. I met him, and he was the most devoted, like, sat there and talked to me in depth about why they overpaid for Nick Foles, how the prices that they paid for Blake Bortles have come back to bite him in the butt because now they can't pay Yannick Ngakoue. I mean, seriously, the most devoted Jacksonville Jaguars fan I've ever come across.
Is he excited about Gardner Minshew being in town?
He did it. I brought it up. And he said, honestly, he goes, well, knowing how the Jaguars go, it's going to be the rookie that's just as good as the guy we just paid $22 million for. And he was like, well, you know, Pete Carroll, and kind of rolled his eyes. And I was like, wait, rolling your eyes at Pete Carroll? He's the second winningest coach. This is his 10th year in Seattle. He will have been in Seattle longer than he was at USC. This is the tipping point this year. And yet, I feel like there's a general sort of eye roll that gets exercised by NFL fans across the nation. Belichick doesn't get that. People think he's kind of miserable and he looks like he's constantly constipated. But there's never this sort of, oh, Belichick, and whatever. That guy's full of snake oil. Like, Pete gets a little bit of that. I can't figure it out. Everybody should love Pete. He's a happy guy.
Well, maybe head coaches in the NFL are meant to be grumpy. You know, and like the more stern they are. Maybe people aren't buying Pete's act. And you know what? We'll hear something about that from JT, Jamar Taylor, when we run his interview at 5 o'clock. But I wonder if maybe it's people don't buy that he's that fired up all the time. And yet, if you know Pete, he is, right? I mean, I've rarely seen him. You know, I think this last round of rules about, you know, putting the head down and the blindside block and things like that, I think are starting to maybe wear on him a little bit, but he's not complaining about it. He's just like, wow, this is really going to be a challenge. But for the most part, yeah, he's always upbeat about everything. And maybe there's a cynical nature in people that they just don't buy that.
Yeah, that could be. I know I've got that cynical nature.
But you buy it, right?
Well, I was slow to warm to Pete Carroll, and yet being around him for this long, and you see him every single day in press conferences, at practice, the way he's bouncing around, shooting basketballs, throwing footballs, doing all those different things. And I actually look at him, and I'm 62, and I look at Pete Carroll, and I go, man, I hope I have as much energy as Pete Carroll at 67 5 years from now. And so, yeah, I buy into it.
Hold on.
How about 5 years ago?
Yeah. See, that's kind of the thing. Generally, people don't get more energized as they get older. So you're looking for like a second wind of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
I think I'm getting my second wind.
All right, listen.
65 years listen. Old is all. All right.
I don't
give
care.
Him hell.
Did anybody else play 54 holes of golf yesterday?
Ooh.
Huh? Anybody else? Anybody else? I don't care what age you are.
Did you have a cart?
Coors Light text line.
Did you have a cart?
Are you 22? Did you play 54 holes of golf yesterday?
Did you have a cart?
Well, yes, I had a cart.
Okay,
yeah,
then.
I did.
So you drove your cart up to your ball, and you stepped out of the cart, you took a swing, and then you sat back down into the cart.
Yeah, and I had a Coors Light with me, too. But it was 90 degrees. We were over at Gamble Sands.
Oh, that totally makes it different, then. When it's 90 degrees, there's certainly a clause in all athletic. When it was 90 degrees in a football game, would you guys just all of a sudden pop some tops on the sideline?
And wait, there's more. Played Bear Mountain 2 in Chelan. Bear Mountain in the morning, then Gamble Sands in the afternoon, and then after dinner, and here's the last 18 holes, it was a putting course there at Gamble Sands. That was the final 18
that
holes. I didn't have a cart for the putting course.
Oh, nice.
All right, so Pete Carroll, you guys done giving me a hard time?
Not yet. Is that the golf Ironman? Is that what you just completed?
For me, there were, you know, I was going to say that they required carts there at Gamble Sands, but they don't because the foursome behind us was walking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go.
The golf Ironman. Which do you think was the toughest, the marathon, the bike, or was it the swim? That was the putting course, I would assume.
Well, the putting course, it was dark already, so we had to use our cell phones to light the holes up.
Yeah. I'll tell you
so
what,
for him,
it will not be denied. Level of dedication exercise there.
Was it the driving? Was it the chips? What was the most, the putting, getting out? Because you have to park your cart pretty far away from the green.
The driving took a lot out of me, Dave. Yeah, the driving did. But no, where was I? Pete Carroll. No, I honestly, I do hope I have as much energy as him. It's fun to watch him. And I used to think that he was just full of it. And I thought, yeah, because I'm not. Somebody texted in here, the 360 Coors Light text line, saying it probably goes back to his USC days. A lot of people don't like USC, and they were always on top. I admit that I didn't really believe Pete Carroll when it came to that whole Reggie Bush story. And then when he got to town, I thought, well, okay, I was slow to warm up to him because I thought Jim Mora got a bad deal there. I thought he should have gotten another year. Now when you look back on it, you can see that it was a great hire and that Mora probably didn't deserve another year. So it was a good move by Todd Leiwicki. And then I read the book, Win Forever, and it was just the title. The title, Win Forever, I'm like, come on, man, really? That didn't sit well with me, seeing the title of that book and reading through it. And so, but now I look at Pete Carroll, and I'm going, man, it's kind of cool that guy's as fired up as he is.
253 says, same reason a lot of people don't like Russell Wilson. People just don't like someone that's positive all the time.
There's definitely some of that.
Well, and I think it goes back to people believe that that's phony, mm-hmm. that it, you're just putting on an act. But having been around both Pete and Russell, that's who they are. You know, and I thought, especially, and this is more about Russell, but I think a lot of it comes from Pete. What about the fourth quarter comebacks and wins? What, 28 now? You know, that he's, I think he was tied at one point with the kid in Detroit. And so Matthew Stafford. But yeah, I mean, how do you explain that? I mean, that's like you get down during a game and all of a sudden, you know, you can sort of, it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like, oh man, things just aren't going our way today. So we're just going to, you know, go out there and just try to get through it. And whereas it's like an opportunity, like we say, when Pete and Russell have somebody, they're down by four in the fourth quarter. They have them right where they want them. And that's, I think, leads to that. And that's where you see that it's very real. And the thing, Russell last year in that Green Bay game, remember, he just started off terrible. He had wide open Doug Baldwin, and he just finished it. And he finished it off with a couple of just beautifully perfect passes. So that's where that mindset comes from. And so that's the proof that it's not a fake deal, that Pete Carroll is. And again, we'll hear that from JT today, but Jamar Taylor, that like this is a different place, and it's because of Pete Carroll. You know, the culture like of a company or something, like you guys have met John Nordstrom, right? I mean, he is just, you see how he is and the culture of Nordstrom and why they've been so successful. It gets set at the top, at the very top. And so Pete, you know, pretty much is the guy that sets the tone for the players anyway. You know, Schneider's on the personnel side and everything, and he's trying to get those kinds of guys. But man, it's the culture there is entirely set by Pete Carroll. And especially when you talk to a guy like Jamar Taylor, who's been at so many different places, they'll tell you this place is very different. But I still go back to, I agree with the 253 that I guess people just think that it's either phony or they just don't like when somebody's positive all the time. Cause people like to complain, right?
Everybody loves to complain.
Yeah. We love to complain about your job. Yeah, Pete Carroll, you're never going to see him sitting around.
One of the rules, no whining. This hour, Danny David Moore, it's brought to you by Parsons Extreme Golf. I'm interested to hear people, and this is an opportunity to hear from Seahawk fans. We spend a lot of training camp talking about, oh, who's battling for the second wide receiver spot, who could be the nickel corner. We're going to talk a lot about that today, but this is an opportunity to kind of get a broader picture, a broader vision of how you feel about the Seahawks. Are you as optimistic about Pete Carroll and the Seahawks as you were when he started? Has any of the magic that he has or that sort of enthusiasm, has it worn off? Do you remain as positive? Because the one thing you say, Dave, and I agree with this, is that people tend to, they don't like someone who makes it seem easy. You would prefer to listen, and coaches go out of their way to make it seem like the hardest thing in the world to win an NFL game, and it is tough. I mean, this is the top. It is a league that enforces parity with everything from draft order to scheduling. Like, there's a lot. The salary cap, all of these things are designed to make it really tough to be a perennially successful team. I feel people still have suspicion or skepticism about Pete's approach, even though we're now in the 10th year in, and there's only one team that's been more successful than Seattle, in this decade of Pete Carroll's coaching, and that's New England. And there's Pete's the only coach other than Belichick in that time to go to multiple Super Bowls, right?
Yep.
Only guy to go to multiple Super Bowls. The Broncos went twice, but you had one with John Fox and then one subsequently with it. It wasn't both the same coach. All of the different things that you see, it's really it's fascinating to me that people still remain skeptical despite a number of consistently positive results. Even in a year last year where they're supposed to be rebuilding and people thought they might be awful, they won 10 games and went to the playoffs.
But Dave, do you ever wonder, and Danny, do you ever wonder how good Belichick would be without Brady and Carroll without Russell Wilson? That's the only thing. I wonder if Pete Carroll just had a middle-of-the-road quarterback, how successful he'd be. I'm sure the defense would still be good. I just wonder about the offense.
How about the other way around? You know, like Russell without Pete, how good would he be?
I think that Russell would still be really good.
Well, I think he would too. I just think it's just interesting because you put him in the right situation because the formula of Pete running the ball, and now we're getting in more into the, you know, nuts and bolts of the team and how they call plays, but I think it really suits Russell. I mean, his efficiency last year, throwing it the least in the NFL, I think that's like the formula for them. I remember asking him that a while ago, and Pete was like, that's ridiculous. Why would we not ever have, you know, Russell throw 35 to 40 times? And they got close to that, what he threw 34 one year, I think 34 times a game. But yeah, it's just, I think, and you look at the variance between those two coaching styles, are they on opposite ends of the spectrum, would you say? I mean, maybe Bruce Arians is kind of that cranky guy, but again, he's super progressive and, you know, does different things. He's got two female coaches on his staff. And so, you know, Pete's kind of that on that side. But yeah, you look at the difference between Belichick and Pete Carroll, man, they're vastly different styles, yet incredibly effective.
I feel fewer people ask that about Brady Belichick because you could say the exact same thing, right? And I know some people wonder, like, who had more to do with whose success, but it's basically accepted that they've been this perfect marriage, right? And that Brady is considered the best quarterback of this generation, and Belichick is considered the best coach. And the quality of one hasn't diminished the respect for the other. Yet, I think that there is a little bit of sense of that. Where would Pete Carroll be without Russell Wilson? There's a little bit of the other side to that, too, which is I do think Pete has put Russell in the best situation to win. Mm-hmm. It's always one of the things that's just puzzling to me that people, despite a decade of results, still tend to be like, well, I don't know about this Pete Carroll stuff. Mm-hmm. I was like, what don't you know about it? Like, they beat the defending Super Bowl champions in a year they were 7-9 and didn't really have a quarterback. They needed Charlie Whitehurst thrown to Ruvell Martin in a Sunday night game to get to the playoffs, and they knock off the Saints. Like, that was as bad as it got. Historical wins, first Super Bowl ever, back-to-back Super Bowl appearances. It's been pretty good.
Oh, it's been really good. And what do you think about, and Danny, you had the Jacksonville fan and the national perspective from going back to New York, but what do you think fellow coaches feel about Pete Carroll, Dave? I mean, do you think, it just made me wonder, you know, I just, if fans feel that way and he's too enthusiastic and all this stuff, I just wonder how the old school coaches feel about Pete Carroll, even though he's 67, so he's technically old school too. And it seems like they're always overlooked. We've talked about this before, not only John Schneider, but Pete Carroll not winning any of those awards for Executive of the Year and Coach of the Year.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because we complain about that every year. And that's another sign of a lack of respect there. And so, you know, they have right now, they have 20 draft choices if you want to count Puna Ford. He was a free agent, but 20 guys from the last two drafts that are still in camp, still here, a couple of free agents as well, but they're getting it done every year. This will be, I mean, if they're able to get to the playoffs and get double digit wins, this will be an amazing feat. I don't think you can ignore either Schneider or Carroll for coaching guys up or getting guys in here that are so young. I mean, yeah, you get your Dwayne Brown, you've got, you know, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, Russell Wilson. But other than that, it's a very young team, and they've always been able to get the right guys in here, like, you know, with John Schneider and his staff, and then Pete Carroll to coach him up. So, and that's why, you know, Jamar Taylor is kind of a rare bird. I think he's going to make the team, and he's a guy that didn't grow up in the system. You know, it's Deshaun Shedd, Akeem King, I mean, you know, Shaquille Griffin, and go back to Richard Sherman and, you know, all the rest of the guys that have played well at corner. And so, it's something that he has done year in and year out, develop young players. And I think there's a lot of coaches around the league that really admire that.
The Mariners take the series against the Tigers. They win 7-2 in today's matinee. They'll be moving on, continuing their East Coast trip tomorrow. Got a lot of excitement. We got two tickets to the Mariners game next Friday, August 23rd. We'll be giving those away. That'll be coming up later in the show. We've also got the interview with Jamar Taylor, who is a name that everybody needs to get to know. You ask about how other coaches feel about Pete. I think other coaches tend to bristle when another guy is unrelentingly optimistic like Pete. And I think a big reason that you hear coaches delve into coach speak and really just talk about, they, by and large, being a football coach means that you act like you get no joy from what you do on a day in and day out basis. I mean, Bill Belichick and Bill Parcells are the epitome of this, where it like actually seems like it physically pains them to coach a football team. That all it is disappointment and guys screwing up plays and just like, oh my God. Like they generally seem to have a little bit of a miserable existence. And some of that's just the image that they project. And maybe there's some regional differences too, of those guys both being from the Northeast. But there's also, like, you think about it, I remember Jim Haslett talking about John Gruden. Haslett was coaching the Saints, and I think Gruden was the Bucs coach. And Haslett makes this comment like, I get to the office a half hour earlier than John Gruden lies about arriving there.
Mm.
And that's like the weirdest insult, isn't it? Like, you're basically saying, like, I'm way more miserable than even he pretends to be. And there's this sort of misery Olympics that goes on among coaches, like who stays the latest, who works the hardest, who schemes and chases, like all of this. And there's a almost like a macho sort of image that these guys project. And Pete doesn't do any of that. And I think that part of that is why guys will tend to bristle of like, who does this guy think he is? Like, compete forever? Like, win forever? It's all about competition? Well, do you think we're not competing over here? We're competing every single day, too.
Right.
And I genuinely, and this I 100% believe, Pete does not care what other people think about his approach. And he doesn't even really care, I think, that players that don't buy in, because he feels that those guys will make themselves evident and they'll be flushed out of here soon. If there's another coach that doesn't buy into the culture, we've seen that. Jeremy Bates was let go after his first year. Like, Pete doesn't, he doesn't allow people who don't buy in to bring his enthusiasm down. This is how he is, and he's unapologetic about it. I really respect that part of his approach.
Yeah, I agree. It's tough to be sort of break ranks from the other coaches and do things differently. You know, remember, wasn't there a story that in the beginning he told everybody to change chairs?
Yes.
And the guys that didn't change chairs were gone.
Supposedly it's Houshmandzadeh. So they had the first meeting when Pete came here and met with the team. It would have been right about the time he was hired. And he had everybody get up and move to a different part of the room than they normally sat. And the message was supposed to be, we're changing things up. We're going to get you out of your comfort zone. You're going to meet other players on this team. This is a big mix. And supposedly, I don't know how much urban myth there is to that, but I've heard a couple of guys who said, yeah, TJ didn't move. Like, he wasn't, and Houshmandzadeh, they paid him $8 million to leave the next season. He didn't make the team. They owed him $8 million, and they're like, see ya, you weren't fast enough to be one of our six best receivers.
He's doing some media stuff now, TJ is, but, you know, I would say Schneider's the same way about not caring. I mean, they came off of a year where offensive line was really an issue after 2017. I mean, Russell was there was one guy that scored a touchdown. I think it was J.D. McKissic that wasn't involved. You know, Russell Wilson wasn't a part of. And offensive line was very much an issue going into that draft in 2018. He moved up to take a punter in the fifth round. And, you know, I just remember Lawyer Malloy was like, what, they ain't got no more offensive linemen in the draft? What? hold on a minute here. Yeah, so has he been worth it?
Yes.
I mean, my gosh, I told you guys about being down on the field and watching him bury those kicks into the, you know, inside the 5-yard line.
Wait,
it was amazing.
You're praising a punter.
I was.
You're praising a punter.
Danny, me and Aaron Levine were laughing. It was so ridiculous how these balls were hitting like right at the 1-yard line and going out. Or he would have like a backward spinning punt that would hit on the 3 and then just bounce straight up in the air. I mean, the guy's an incredible weapon, but I mean, Schneider, I'm sure he knew he was going to take some heat for that, but he doesn't care, you know, and Pete's the same way. Who cares? I mean, it's working. So, and it's real. It's not some act that he's putting on.
Pete gives as many, well, he cares as little as Malik Smith does. is the texter from the 253. I had to sanitize that a little bit.
So would Pete have number zero on then?
Yes, he would wear number zero if he was wearing a uniform number. It is Danny Dave Moore. It's time for us to take two.
Take two.
Felix Hernandez, he's scheduled to make one more rehab start in Tacoma about 5 to 6 days before he will be back at T-Mobile Park and taking the mound.
What would Pete Carroll say about this appearance by Felix Hernandez?
Oh, we talk about the magic that he's able to resummon, and this guy's been working his tail off to get back in there, and I'm just so excited for him to have the opportunity to get out there, and let's see what he can do. Let's see what
and
he can do.
And on the other extreme of the spectrum, Jim Moore.
What?
Are you excited about Felix?
Well, I have mixed feelings. I just have a hard time believing that he's been out since early May with a grade one lat strain or groin strain or whatever the strain is. I know we're talking about being positive and upbeat, but you came to the wrong department for that with this one. I'm looking forward to seeing Felix. I want to see him go out in sort of King style, except, you know, I just keep coming back to Felix not buying into what everybody wanted him to do, and I don't think it needed to reach this point with Felix Hernandez, but here we are, and so we're going to have a bunch of salutes to Felix in September, I guess.
If Pete's book was called Win Forever, what would the book on your philosophy be called?
Cover Forever.
Nope, I've got the answer. The answer is win sometimes, parentheses, unless it snows.
Help us out, Ashley. Come on. That wasn't even funny. No one is laughing.
I am laughing.
509. No one in the 509 is laughing. I loved being in the 509 the last 2 days.
Oh, did you?
Oh, man. Brewster and Pateras.
I like
Chelan.
I
Wenatchee. Like it was awesome.
Danny.
Apples everywhere.
That was excellent. That was an excellent
that wasn't
title
funny.
He came up
when
with.
It was good. It
really funny.
I'm sorry, Jim.
Wasn't funny.
Good.
Really funny. Come on, Ashley.
Would it be better with an asterisk and then a footnote down below or in the parentheses?
I like the
unless
parentheses.
It snows.
Parentheses.
Yeah.
Okay. Landry Jones, he's the first quarterback to sign with the XFL.
I'm excited for the XFL. I was excited for the AAF. I like alternative football leagues, and I think there's room for a second football league to succeed. Yeah. They just got to do it differently than the AAF did.
I would like to see them come out with, make football violent again. And see if maybe that motto, all of a sudden.
MFBA.
Is that how that goes? Yeah. I wouldn't even try that on the air. But, man, this is Landry Jones played in 18 games for the Steelers. 1 year, he played in 3 games. It's 23 for 26. But how about our guy Jake Heaps?
I know. Jake's been invited to the draft or said he's in the draft pool.
He is in the draft pool. Well, I told Jake this. I'm like, had I to do it over again, I probably wouldn't have gone to Europe and tried to play. But at the end of my career, if I was a younger man, like Jake is, if I hadn't had a 9-year career, if it was 3 and there was a European league or XFL or something, heck yeah. Why not? You can only play football for so long. So I'm pulling for Jake to do that. He's a great, he's got a job here, I'm sure, anytime he wants it, but it would be awesome to see him get out there. And maybe he's, teaching all these clinics and stuff and doing all this stuff for Russell Wilson. Maybe he's gotten, older and wiser and will put that out on the field.
I think we need to think in multimedia terms for Jake. Jake should absolutely play in the XFL, and we should mic him up and then have his soundtracks each Monday here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Won't it be fun, though? I'm looking forward to the XFL.
Yes.
When it gets here, when is it? February when it starts?
You got Jim Zorn. You know who's the running back coach?
Mike Riley.
No.
Oh.
Butch Goncharoff.
I saw Goncharoff on the sidelines.
He was on the sidelines, and I was like, I know that guy. And then I was like, it occurred to me. Yeah, and they do have Mike Riley there, too. But
is he offensive coordinator?
I think he is. And Jim Zorn was talking about how Butch Goncharoff is a great, it's good to have a head coach here on the staff and all the things he does as a head coach. And Mike Riley was probably sitting there going, yeah, I was also a head coach.
Yeah, a couple of different places. But, Oregon State twice, Nebraska, San Diego Superchargers.
The Superchargers. Yeah. Butch Goncharoff's an excellent coach. So I'm looking forward to seeing.
Are they going to recruit players there with the Seattle?
Yeah,
you're allowed to.
That's what it's about.
Can you do that?
Okay. Sure can.
Well, they should be top in the league then.
I just want to know if they'll introduce him and list an academic institute on his coaching resume.
One can hope.
It's Danny David Moore. Where are the hot spots for competition on the roster? We'll tell you next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
This hour, Danny, Dave, and Moore is brought to you by Parsons Extreme Golf. This is going to be the second starting wide receiver for this team. How about the nickel cornerback? In my mind, those are the two biggest uncertainties for this team moving through the preseason. I think those are two questions that we're trying to answer. I think the other spots you can start to see is Jacob Martin making a push at the Leo position, that starting defensive end. Will that be Ziggy Ansah? But he's coming off of injury. But I think the two most wide open competitions are that nickel corner, and then who's going to be the second starting wide receiver for Seattle?
Yeah, well, I've been pounding the drum on Jerron Brown for almost a year, but you know, he looks good, and basically more than anything, you know, and they threw him the ball, he caught it last year, and he scored touchdowns. But more than anything with Jerron Brown is what you hear from Brian Schottenheimer. You know, when coaches, you know, and that's what he said, something about Joey Hunt. Like it was whatever it was in the middle of an interview.
I love Joey Hunt.
Yeah, it was in the middle of our production meeting that we had. And, you know, he was like, okay, so players that I love. And I'm like thinking, okay, he's going to talk about a receiver or a running back or a quarterback. It was Joey Hunt. So, I mean, when you hear him, the way he talks about Jerron Brown is, hey, the guy did everything we asked him to do last year, and they just didn't target him enough. So I think that they're going to go to Jerron Brown a lot more. I think he's going to be probably the guy that has the best stats. Is that what we're calling the number two receiver, whoever's the second leading receiver?
I kind of think of it as the guy that when they have a two-receiver set, so if they have two tight ends.
Yeah, who's going to start?
Yeah, who will be the guy that they look to on the other side of Tyler Lockett? In some ways, it's kind of artificial because they're going to run three receivers so much at the time.
Right.
But that idea of who would be the starter opposite of Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, so I think the bigger question there is who is the third receiver, right? You know, because in my mind, it's Jerron Brown. But, you know, that's where the battle really happens. And David Moore seems to be, you know, again, who they're talking about, they love him. But you've got DK Metcalf, Gary Jennings, Malik Turner, who I know that Russell really likes. And then, David Moore. I mean, I think the guys, we'll see about Jez Ferguson. Because, you know, there's a lot of hype about him right now. He walked by the other day today in his uniform. I'm like, that guy's huge. I mean, I know we talked to him a couple of days ago, but what a huge target he is. He's bigger than DK Metcalf. But anyway, whoever those other guys that fill in, because what are they going to keep? Five, maybe six receivers? You got a guy like JD McKissic, and you can use him as a hybrid. He's, you know, sort of running back slash receiver and returner. So it's, you know, it's going to come down to, you know, can Gary Jennings somehow make a push? How about John Ursua? You know, that's another guy that had a couple of he had a catch in the game last Thursday that really flashed. He looked like Doug Baldwin. He was lined up in the slot, got open, ran a really good, precise route, and caught the ball, turned, and ran, and made a move. So it's starting to sort of narrow down. But now's the time where DK Metcalf and Jez Ferguson, especially Ferguson, because Metcalf's a second rounder. See, I'm not saying that they're going to keep him, but I mean, he just showed so much promise. But Jez Ferguson has really only showed up in that game. And then, you know, a couple of times in practice.
It just looks so wide open on who, not only who's going to be the second receiver, but who's going to make the team, because they got so many candidates there. And I'm just looking at all of them going, boy, when they get down to the 53-man roster time, how are they going to make a decision there? I'm not so sold on Jerron Brown. I guess I've made that clear pretty much in previous shows. But I'm looking at Brown's stats again, and not necessarily. We all know what happened last year. And he had the five touchdowns and 14 catches. But it goes back to Arizona, too. He had a great year in 2017 with 31 catches. But there were 3 years where he had 11 receptions, including 2 years that he played all 16 games and only had 11 receptions. So I just think it's going to be one of those situations where it's just like we're talking about with the sacks this year. And, Dave, I think you pointed out, somebody was mentioning, maybe it was Paul Moyer, about Michael Bennett leading the team with 8 sacks in 2013. I think you're going to have Lockett way ahead on the reception list, and then whoever the number two guy is, it's going to be, you know, there'll be a bunch of guys right around with the same number of receptions. And I actually, as far as receptions go, I think a running back's probably going to be the second leading receiver on the team.
Yeah, it could be. That's what sounds like what they wanted. They want out of Chris Carson. They want 50 targets to Chris Carson. So He looks different, by the way.
How so?
He is, I think he looks faster, and his cuts and his shake is more pronounced. He was not, and they're good cuts too, because you want to be a north-south runner, and that's what he is. He's a north-south runner, but as far as like putting moves on people downfield, he looks better in that regard. And we know he can catch, and same thing with Rashad Penny. Somebody asked me, why didn't they throw to the running backs more last year? Like, I don't know. I guess everything was working pretty well offensively. And, you know, checking down to the backs, it's a great weapon to have, because you want to get those guys in space. And if you run a swing route where there's a, you know, linebacker that's 10 yards away from him and you get him the ball, yeah, he can put a – it's much easier running past a linebacker in a corner than it is going through the line of scrimmage, you know, where the middle of the tackle box. So that'll be interesting to see, and maybe that's where it comes from. Because like you said, Jim, you know, they're going to kind of piece it together with a bunch of different guys getting sacks. Same thing with the receptions. Maybe there's no clear number two. Maybe it's Chris Carson. Maybe it's Rashad Penny.
Who looks more different from this year compared to last year? Is it Rashad Penny? Because he's obviously changed, and there was a lot of discussion about how heavy he was early in the season last year and after he came off. Remember, he didn't have training camp because he broke the bone in his hand. Who looks more different? Is it Penny in his second year, or is it Carson from last year to this year?
I think it's Carson. You know, and I thought in the beginning of camp, you look at Penny, and he's lighter and quicker and everything. But, man, it's just something about the explosion from Chris Carson. There's just more confidence there, I think. Now he knows he can do it. Because, look, this guy was at the top of the heap in high school. He was going to go to running back U, Georgia. He got he was committed there, and then he hurt his knee, and that went to the wayside. So he ended up going to junior college, then he goes to Oklahoma State, then he gets drafted in the seventh round. And I think he is that superstar type of running back. But and we saw it last year, got 1,150 yards. But yeah, there's something about his shake. It was kind of remind me of, you know, we never really talked about that with Marshawn Lynch as much as we should, but he had great moves downfield and just able to sell a guy one way or the other. And he looks much better that way, and he just has more burst downfield, where it's not like he's going to run somebody over. It's more like he's going to put a move on a corner or a safety downfield.
Yeah, I'm just looking back at last year, thinking about running back receptions. Mike Davis, who went to Chicago in free agency, he had 34 catches last year for 214 yards, and Chris Carson was a good option too with 20, and then Rashad Penny had 9, and you expect Rashad Penny to catch quite a few more than that. So Carson, yeah, Dave, I'm surprised to hear that a little bit, just because I'm thinking about Penny. It's noticeable with his body change and losing some weight, but Carson looks even more explosive than last year to you.
Well, that's to me anyway, and that's what we've seen in practice. I don't know how much we're going to see him in the preseason, but yeah, it was just kind of weird. It caught my eye in the scrimmage, especially. Jake Heaps and I were there kind of calling that a little bit, and there was times where it was like, wow, I had to check the number on that. I thought maybe it was Penny or maybe it was J.D. McKissick. So I'm not sure if that's what the coaches are seeing. Maybe I'm just seeing things.
No, come on, Dave.
Could be, man.
No, you've got two well-placed sources, your eyes.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's got great shake, and maybe we didn't give him enough credit for that last year, but yeah, his quickness, I think, has improved. We know he likes to work hard.
Yes, he does. It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. We have two tickets to next Friday's Mariner game. We're going to give those away and also look at nickel cornerback, another hot spot. That's next.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
All right, we got two tickets. These are going to the August 23rd Mariners game. They're hosting Toronto. Don't forget to come early. Stop by our live broadcast at Edgar's Cantina. That's from 3 to 6 p.m. Tickets and our broadcast brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto.
It's really important that everybody shows up for that game, right, Mariner fans?
That's right.
Because every Mariner fan that shows up means one less Blue Jay fan.
Or yes, someone to encourage the Blue Jay fans to be a little bit more polite and don't comment on the Mariner fans.
Just say
be,
that.
Be good guests.
Absolutely. 100% agree.
How bad are they, Ashley? How obnoxious are the Toronto fans?
It's pretty bad.
You're there all the time.
It is pretty bad. It is my least favorite series by far, and I hate saying that.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I do hate saying it.
It just becomes a bad experience because I'm okay with fans coming to support their team and they travel. I think that's amazing and everybody should do it. But to come in and act like you own the place and not be acting like a guest and just be like, haha, we're winning or we outnumber you however many much, like, that's just not nice.
Yeah.
Not a fan of it.
It's the first time Canadians have ever been accused of being rude.
Yes.
That's true. Canadian people, always well-humored and very nice.
So, we'll see how it goes. So it is important for Mariner fans to get out there. We will load up the phone lines. It's going to be a trivia contest. We always like those, right?
Love them.
Love trivia contest. Yep. We'll do that.
Can't get enough.
Who's going to be this team's nickel cornerback? I love the nickel cornerback conversation because we always talk about starting corners. We know the starting corners. It's Shaquille Griffin on one side. It's Trey Flowers on the other. Nickel corner, they're on the field more than half the time.
Yeah,
they're often as much a starter, maybe more of a starter, than the strong side linebacker is.
Right.
Who's it going to be this year?
Yeah, so you're basically swapping out Michael Kendricks. Michael Kendricks, I cannot wait to watch him play. I cannot wait. I hope he's there.
Yeah, you can watch him the first three games anyway.
He has the best connection to the ground of any player I've ever seen.
You just like him
so low to the ground and so quick and so like fierce.
You like him because he just absolutely hammers people, right? He took a shot at Travis Homer.
Homer Travis, yeah, he did. Because the guy was running through the middle of his defense. He's like, you can't do that here. So he hammered him. But no, he's going to be, but you're right, you're trading this guy for him. I like Akeem King still. I mean, I thought he was really good last year, and you know, I think he might be the front runner, but Jamar Taylor today told us he could play anywhere that he wants. Kalen Reed is also in the mix there, but if you ask me, I think, you know, it's either Jamar Taylor or Akeem King, with Akeem King maybe being just a little bit of an edge.
Where do you put Amadi in that race?
Yeah, you know, that's another one. He's listed as a safety. So, you know, maybe he can, I would say third, you know, but maybe somebody texted in, they think he's going to start at nickel. Maybe he does. He's a very electric player. I mean, his speed, everything, he's not a big guy at all, but he flies around. I haven't seen, like, Ben Burkervin, I've seen him just fly around the way he runs. He looks very purposeful. I think he's going to have a big game against Minnesota. I think he's going to be the guy that kind of steps up and that we're talking about, like we did Austin Kalitro. Afterwards, I saw Austin Kalitro walking out, and I said, "Hey, man, you played such a good game." And I introduced myself. He goes, "I remember you." I think we had him in there like three times, didn't we?
He came in one time with KJ, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
To see how to do an interview or something.
He did. He came in because he wants to be a pro, and KJ brought him with him. So, but as far as the nickel goes, it could be Ugo Amadi. But we'll see. I mean, it's just tougher when you haven't seen him that much, and we've pretty much seen what Akeem King can do. So I like him if I was making my choice right now, that's who I'd pick.
Where does Jamar Taylor factor in? He's a guy that's made some noise. We're going to talk to him at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of a rare bird because other than Justin Coleman, as far as a corner coming in here, it hasn't really worked out. It's been the homegrown guys that have been, you know, Deshaun Shedd, who's back, and there's another guy that could possibly start. He could play any of the positions. So, you know, maybe they'll just use him. What about Nico Thorpe? That's another one. You know, I mean, he's played really well, too. So that may be one of the most competitive spots there. Maybe, you know, second to linebacker on this entire team. So, but yeah, I'm just not sure with Ugo Amadi, just because you haven't really seen him and you haven't seen him that much in a game. And maybe he does end up being that guy. But I think they got a lot of really good choices there.
You think Shed's on the bubble?
Shedd, I think Deshaun Shedd makes this team. To me, that's kind of a no-brainer, just because he's so versatile and he can play everywhere. So I think he brings a lot. And, you know, he's another guy that looked different. I thought that blitz he ran and got the sack for a safety, I mean, there was some explosion there I don't think we've seen out of him. And sometimes it's just knowing where you're going and being confident. And sometimes it's that, you know, he had an ACL or something that he had to come back from. And some of these guys, you know, you go into rehabilitation and you train so hard, you end up coming back more explosive and faster. And that's what it looked like to me.
It'll be interesting. I was impressed by Ugo Amadi, and I didn't watch how he played on defense in the exhibition game the first time through as much as I watched how he returned punts, and he seemed so confident when he got the ball in his hand.
Yeah.
Like, that's something. You could absolutely see it. And that's a tough role. I mean, returning punts and getting out in that environment, and obviously guys have done it, but I've seen so many players. Tate was a little bit this way. When Tate was out there returning punts early on, you could see when he got it, he wasn't ready to move ahead. He was looking to go side to side. Mm-hmm. And Amadi was, he just, you could see his confidence when he got the ball in his hand.
It's weird. If you go look at his highlights in Oregon, like when he gets his hands on the ball, all of a sudden it becomes like he's supercharged. And same thing with the interceptions that he got, you know, and it's a return. So it's a totally different act, you know, than playing defense. But yeah, there's something about him that when he gets the ball in his hands, I was the exact opposite, by the way. The few times I got my hands on the ball, I just became somebody come tackle me now. So, but yeah, it's interesting to watch that. And it's interesting, the mentality there. That's what fascinates me is like, why do you look so much faster and better when you have the ball in your hand? You know, and like, it's an emergency is what I always say about, you know, these players that like Michael Kendricks, he plays like every play is an emergency. You got to get there as fast as you can. It's like a life and death situation. And for him, it's when he gets the ball in his hand, for some reason, it just comes alive. Yeah, so I'm glad you saw that on the punts. You know, I didn't pay particularly that much attention on those, but you know, that's one thing that you can see from him at University of Oregon.
Because he is not built like a Seahawks corner.
No.
He's a little squatty. He's explosive. And I know Pete said in the past, Pete's talked about getting a guy with a special trait. They obviously see something in him to deviate from their normal prototype at that position. There's something that they really like about either the explosiveness he has, the mentality. I'm eager to see it. And I thought you could see some real confidence when he had his hands, when he got the ball in his hands.
Well, he's a playmaker. You just look at it. 6 interceptions the last 2 years at Oregon. 3 of them went for pick sixes. He forced 4 fumbles. Yeah, you mentioned the punt returning. Now, they had Moore and Lockett returning punts today. I'm not sure how that's all going to shake out, but Ugo Amadi is—he's definitely in play there as that nickel corner too.
It is Danny, Dave, and Moore. We got the professor. John Clayton joins us next.